You are listening to the Angry and Non-Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Okay, welcome back. This is Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Welcome back. You know, a lot of you know that we also run on what is known as the Thank God It's Friday show. We had the morning slot after Free Speech Radio News on Radio Free Kansas. Well, we finally got him in. Mike Cadell, the producer of Radio Free Kansas. And you can check out his work with his personal blog at Fighting Cock Flyer. That's one word, fightingcockflyer.blogspot.com. And you can check out his comments on Twitter at Posse Call. So, you know, we're going to be talking about the issue of abortion in the free state of Kansas and how that relates to capitalism, greed, Republican hubris, Democratic spinelessness, you know, just total confusion, mass confusion when it comes to, you know, women's rights, when it comes to the rights of minorities, when it comes to, I'm not even going to get into Native issues, man. You know, it's just, right now we're going to talk about what's going on in Kansas in terms of women, in terms of all women. And, you know, Mike, you know, welcome to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Finally, got you on the air.
It's an honor and privilege to be on your show, brother.
All right, man. Thank you. And thank you for having us on, you know, your show, which again, you can find at Blog Talk Radio, Radio Free Kansas. We occupy the morning show on Friday at the Free Speech Radio News, but he has programming and call-in shows all during the week. This is internet radio, progressive internet radio is there, and, you know, we need you to support it. So, you know, after you hear the show today, I would like you guys to go, you know, check it out. He'll give you the direct address to the show over at Blog Talk Radio. And in the meantime, Mike, you know, you had a couple of things you wanted to talk about. So, you know, what's on your mind?
Well, I'd like to, you know, first off, try to describe what has been called the abortion wars in Kansas, Free State Kansas, and try to explain a little bit about why, how it came to be that Dr. George Tiller was murdered in his church. And the dynamics of the state of government and capitalism, how that's all become intertwined within it, and it really isn't. It isn't a it's a confusing mess, but only for people outside. And I think it's by design in certain respects because people in Kansas and maybe for the rest of the United States are under the misconception that. That these clinics are solely for providing abortion. They're, and I got a rude education, better than 15 years ago when I entered into protecting the clinics. I was a newspaper publisher and editor for 3 years before I was approached to buy a doctor to track down the people who were bothering her. And, at that time, I was not a private detective. I ended up becoming one, carrying a gun. In a short period of time, less than 2 or 3 years, I was carrying a gun, and people were running around stalking my clients and myself, trying to kill us.
That's a hell of a beginning. You know, I mean, there is a lot to abortion that, or to the really, I don't even like to use the term abortion. I prefer a woman's right to choose. And, or a family's right to choose, a couple's right to choose. But basically, it comes down to her having a final say and all say on what happens to her body and what sort of medical treatment she's going to receive and the important issue of privacy. Now, you know, I've written about this. You talk about this. And we can, you know, mention religion. We're going to have to anyway, I suppose, on this subject. But the far right in the United States has used abortion, the medical act itself or the medical procedure itself, as a rallying call on a religious level, on the political level, of course, you know, obviously, on you know, ethical, whatever the hell, And they're using extreme methods. Now, you're in Kansas, and you mentioned Dr. Tiller. Now, he was a doctor that was, you know, serving his community. He was serving the women in his community. And I can't remember the name of the nutcase that attacked him. But
Scott Roeder.
But, you know, there were folks in the mainstream press, Mike, who were on, you know, all of the major networks, evangelical Christians, far-right Republicans, who were saying that, you know, Dr. Tiller basically brought it upon himself. Isn't that what we were hearing from Fox News?
Well, it's even worse than that. A lot of them were disavowing. A lot of the people in Kansas, at least, like Kansans for Life, that's the name of their group, and Operation Rescue in Wichita, denounced the act as abortion, or excuse me, denounced the act of the murder of Dr. Tiller. They denied it, but at the same time, they all knew Scott Roeder. Scott Roeder's telephone number to Operation Rescue was on a post-it note on the dash of his car, the car he was apprehended in within hours after killing Dr. Tiller. They all knew Scott Roeder. They knew he shot him. They knew he was going to shoot. He said in the courtroom, in an open public courtroom, right beside them, in the courtroom, when they tried to railroad Dr. Tiller, and they failed, the jury ruled against them, and they got mad, and less than 90 days later, the same guy who was sitting with them in the courtroom in Wichita went into Dr. Tiller's church, cold-bloodedly shot him in the face in his church.
In church.
Yeah, Dr. Tiller was standing as an usher outside. Now, I have to posit this a little bit because I want to let you know I was not protecting Dr. Tiller. I was never hired by Dr. Tiller. He and I had significant disagreements because he wouldn't let me be a dictator over his life. My other clients didn't like me, but they put up with it, and they're all alive. But Dr. Tiller was a Republican, by the way. It was a horrible tragedy. Really sent out a signal across the United States that they'll get you. They dynamited Dr. Tiller's front porch of his clinic in Wichita with dynamite, blew the front off of 1985. And the doctors I worked for and the nurses I worked with, as in a professional basis, were largely, they would refer patients, difficult patients. By that I mean patients who had really serious health problems to Dr. Tiller because he was the most qualified in the state of Kansas to deal with the very difficult pregnancy terminations. You were talking what they call fetal anomalies. That's where the fetus is deformed, has no skull, has no backbone, or, you know, or have extreme fetal anomalies is what they call them. But like I said, I'd rather talk about the capital dynamics of the abortions and the political and religious opposition that we were faced with in Kansas.
All right, Mike, if you can give me a basic rundown on what the situation is in Kansas right now with choice and the economic corruption that you see behind what's making it not work the way that it should work.
There's a whole series of politicians cascading from as far back as 1991, beginning with the Summer of Mercy, which was the so-called Summer of Mercy, when thousands of people were recruited and busted from Assembly of God, basically Christian dominionist churches throughout the state, spearheaded by... I'm trying to remember the guy's name is Randall Terry. He came into town, into Wichita, and spearheaded a movement among many of the Christian dominionist churches Now, for your listeners, I don't know if they're familiar with Christian Dominionism, but it's basically, this is a Christian country, and you better be white, and we're running the country. It's not only one nation under God, it's one nation under our thumb. And he networked and organized tens of thousands of people to start protests in Wichita. That was 1991, the so-called Summer of Mercy. Now, that was just something I watched on local television, and at that time I was running newspapers, and that's when I got solicited to get involved in protecting the healthcare professionals around that were working in other clinics outside of Wichita. And at that time, Governor Joan Finney, a Democrat, Governor Joan Finney, in that summer, came down and spoke in I think it was the Wichita State University Shocker Stadium, and came down and sort of come out of the closet, you know what I mean? She came down and spoke before tens of thousands of people that were assembled there to proclaim that she was, quote-unquote, pro-life. And here is a woman, here is a Democrat, here is a governor, and she knew where it was going to be safe politically, and she proceeded to denounce women for having wanting reproductive choices in Kansas. I don't think she's ever got drunk and fell off her houseboat on a leg since.
So where do you see things going in terms of the political climate right now?
Well, the political opportunism has not stopped since Governor Joan Finney. There are a significant body of members of the Kansas Democratic Party who recently been either ran out or quit because they were pro-life. They infiltrated the pro-life the so-called pro-life, anti-choice, whatever you want to call them, Christian Dominionists, infiltrated. They already had a bastion, a stronghold, fueled and funded by Charles Koch, the billionaire in Wichita. They'd already had a bastion in the Republican Party, and we proceeded to infiltrate the Kansas Democratic Party, and basically took over the state government. Right now, where we're at, brother, is the state of Kansas is now a dictatorship when it comes to reproductive choices for women. It's a dictatorship against choice in the state of Kansas. It's thoroughly established. You cannot even be elected unless your district is enlightened. If you are pro-choice, a huge loss of the state legislature, a super majority in both chambers, the House and the Senate of the state house, are rabidly against women. Rabid against women and women's reproductive choice. Even doctors who are a female doctor who is a representative gets up and tries to explain the medical necessity of safe and legal and clean abortions in the state of Kansas, and she's practically shouted down, and she's a member of their own chamber. It's a dictatorship. It's a patriarchal dictatorship, and it's fueled by extreme capitalists. Charles Koch.
So what's happening on the activist level there?
Well, there's very little. There are lobbyists, and there's a lot of women. They've reopened a clinic on Dr. Tiller's former property. Reopened a clinic there, and that was after 2 or 3 years. Well, it's been since he was killed. And it's on shaky legs. I think the doctors are having to be flown in. There are no Kansas doctors, I think, that are manning that clinic. They have to bring. There might be one, but the one that came forward and volunteered, she was receiving all kinds of anonymous death threats and people outside of her house. And I don't think she went through with it. And I think there is a clinic in Kansas City, Kansas, which I worked at, in a protective status, that's still there. And I think it's sort of funny that we paid for the at least we paid for the doctors that I was protecting at the time. They had to pay out of their own pockets. The nurses and the doctors had to pay the $2,000 or $3,000 in 1995 to have the security cameras put up, because the capitalist landlords that run a lot of these clinics, they didn't want to get involved in this. They wanted to, you know, they wanted you to pay more rent for the building because, you know, the insurance rates are going up. Don't tell anybody there's being abortions performed there, because our insurance will go up. And if you do that, we'll raise the rent. And you want security cameras? Are you giving me a break? You can't do that. Well, we're not paying for that. So the nurses and doctors had to, out of their own pockets, pay to have the security cameras up. I fought like hell, and I know I'm on your show, so I can say, I can use a little profanity or graphic language. But I'll tell you, I fought like hell. I worked my ass off trying to convince these capitalist landlords that it's in their best interest to have good security. And I had to buck a lot of people to initiate. I think it's ironic, and this is sort of sick, but you know that's what happens when you work in security too long. That you know the security techniques of metal detectors and handheld metal detectors, security cameras, all that was being initiated in the abortion, less than half dozen abortion clinics in Kansas that existed. All those were initiated well before 9/11, and now they're everywhere. I thought that was horrible, but it's a statement of our country that in a woman's clinic, a woman's reproductive health clinics, we had to initiate security tactics to thwart terrorism even before 9/11. And when 9/11 happened, now we're a whole country full of security, crazy ass security. It boggles my mind really to watch that happening.
Yeah, we're going to take a break in a moment, but I want to ask you before we go if you a brief thought. You just mentioned something I think everyone needs to really be thinking about. How is it that, you know, you had so much violence going on in terms of Eric Rudolph? You know, the Klan never stopped, right? The White Patriot Party never stopped. What was her name? Shonda Ford with the Minutemen, where they went in and shot up that family. You know, this has been going on. And then, you know, they wait till 9/11 and then all of a sudden, why isn't domestic terrorism, you know, which is usually conservative, which is usually Christian, which is always on you know, the far side of fascism. Why is it that they never look at that as terrorism? We have people listening to Glenn Beck and Sean Hannity and Bill O'Reilly, and they get ideas. You know, they get ideas. Why is that not, you know, listed? Why is that not looked at as acts of the domestic terrorism?
Well, I'll give you a segue for your next bit, our next spot together. I'll tell you quite blunt. I'm a retired licensed private detective in the state of Kansas, and for over 10 years I was hired primarily to protect abortion doctors and their health care professionals. Frankly, you know, I liaisoned with law enforcement, and part of that was my duty was to work with to communicate and seek advice from the Federal Bureau of Investigation, the FBI. And I'm going to give you something right now. This is the first time I have ever said this on air or to anybody in public. The first thing the agent I met with, he's a wonderful guy, actually, he's a nice guy. The first thing he asked me, he said, "So you were with the Weathermen, do you know anything about ELF?" And this is in 1992. And I go, "ELF? Elf?" And he goes, "No, the Environmental, the Earth Liberation Front." And I said, "No, and by the way, I was not with the Weathermen." I mean, I'll tell you more about what the feds did. They did some good things for me, and they did some bad things, but basically they just, they were deeply into that. They were already eyeballing who they considered the the bad guys in their world at that time. And I was amazed. I thought, wait, that is not weak. Militias going on, all running rampant. Posse comitatus types all over, or armed paramilitary, extrajudicial, extralegal, outside of the law, running around enforcing liens, even on judges in Kansas, on judges. Armed groups all over the state of Kansas back then in 1991, 92. And this Phoebe, all he came up with that, and I was like, do you really realize what kind of monster we're dealing with here? You know, I'm trying to tell him, you know, look, this is a lot worse of a situation than some kids burning Winnebagos up in a parking lot. You know, this is not what we're on. And it took me years and years and years to, and I, in certain respects, I never really got through to them, working with them, trying to get them to open up and go after these people. Clinton was president during a lot of this. Many of the FBI agents I knew were bitter men, angry white men, largely. Although I was surprised to find some Catholics and Jews among them. And I watched a metamorphosize. Women were being hired at that time, and they were very proud of that, rightfully so. But I really, it was an eye opener to see that the anti-communism, the anti-socialism, basically very, very, very conservative people, they felt most comfortable. And this goes for a lot of law enforcement officers out there that are listening, that if you are listening, it does not behoove you to take political sides or to sound conservative in your thinking and in your practice as a security professional. As a matter of fact, when you lose your open mind, when you lose your ability to criticize, you are crippling yourself, your ability to be an investigator. You have to understand how people think, and part of that is understanding communalism, socialism, and many of the great ideas that have came across our society in the last, 500 years since the Enlightenment and the Reformation. You've got to get beyond that. A lot of law enforcement officers are they pride themselves on being Republican and conservatives, and it's a real mental hang up that they have within their work. They really, really have to get over that. They hated Bill Clinton, hated him, and I don't really like the guy either. But I mean, even the rumor that Leonard Peltier was going to be might be pardoned by Clinton, they rioted outside, I think, the Supreme Court, and they were proud of it. They got out there, and first time the FBI has ever really demonstrated, and they have a little professional association. They're out there yelling against pardoning Leonard Peltier. If this country goes into a fascist state, most of the cops are going to be very difficult to win the cops over because of that mental framework they're in.
Well,
wasn't
it difficult in Chile? I mean, wasn't it difficult in even South Africa? You know, they didn't really want to give up there. Well, it's not just so much that you have power over people. You also have a certain status when you do law enforcement because you represent the state. You represent the municipality. Yeah. You represent the power structure. And the public has the perception anyway that you're there to protect them when you're really there to protect property. And, any honest law enforcement professional, I think, will agree with that. Okay, this is Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. We're speaking to Mike Adell, the executive producer of Roger Free Kansas. You can find his work at fightingcockflyer.blogspot.com. We're going to take a break so stations may identify themselves. This is Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Please stay tuned.
Michael, what do you think about ending the Federal Reserve banking system, the private banking system?
I think there's a larger issue. There's a larger issue to deal with.
And the Fed, it's a private bank.
And capitalism, that's the problem. Capitalism. Capitalism has to go.
Capitalism has to go.
This is Intelligence Aboriginal Radio, Angry Indian Radio for the Fourth World.
Radio Voice, not of original.
Hi, this is Randy Rhodes. You know, when Richard Nixon abused power, Congress held serious bipartisan investigations that did result in articles of impeachment. He resigned before he could be impeached, but strong evidence suggests that George Bush and Dick Cheney launched an illegal war, lied to Congress, spied on Americans without court orders, leaked classified information, produced phony news reports, imprisoned without charge, tortured, used illegal weapons, and targeted civilians. This message is sponsored by AfterDowningStreet.org.
This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. Head on RadioNetwork.com, an internet-based conversation radio experiment. Available most easily at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a listen live button. Just jump right on it, and there you are. Or if you're on a mobile device, it's also easy to find us at TuneIn Radio, a nice app for your mobile smartphone, or Tuner Internet Radio, or DAR.FM, or Stitcher Radio. Streama.com. We are rather ubiquitous. I mean, if we got more every night, we'd be paying salaries, right? Head on RadioNetwork.com.
Nice repair. Sachin is off the mark.
घरेलू हिंसा में बाधा डालकर उसे रोको। बेल बजाओ। घरेलू हिंसा अधिनियम पर जानकारी के लिए bellbajao.org पर लॉग ऑन करें। ब्रेक थ्रू की पहल।
Yo, what's up? My name is Jasiri X, you know what I'm saying? And I'm really responding to the call, man, of my sister Rosa Clemente, you know what I'm saying? For men in hip-hop, really stand up and say, like, rape under no circumstances is acceptable, you know what I'm saying? Rape shouldn't be rapped about. It shouldn't be supported, you know what I'm saying? And I'm really feeling like, you know, especially after Rick Ross came out today and said what he said, you know, he didn't use the word rape, but he described a scenario in which, you know, he put something in a woman's drink and had sex with her, and she didn't consent. If you have sex with a woman and she didn't consent, that's rape. And we have to say no to rape. And beyond Rick Ross, whether it's Fox News or their viewers attacking Zelina Maxwell for asking men to stop raping women, whether it's Hollywood, you know, perpetuating, you know, this rape culture, you know, it's got to stop. It's really, you know, we got to take personal responsibility as men. My name is Jasiri X. This is One Hood.
You are listening to the Angry Indian Unintelligent Aboriginal Radio.
My name is Gordon Hill. I'm from the Kwakwaka'wakw Nation in northwest coast of so-called British Columbia, Canada, and you're listening to Radio Intelligent Indigenous.
Okay, welcome back to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. We're in the studio here, the virtual studio, with Mike Cadell. He's the executive producer of Roger Free Kansas, of which you can find this show, Intelligent Aboriginal Radio, on their Thank God It's Friday morning slot right after Free Speech Radio News. You can check out his work on his blog at fightingcockflyer.blogspot.com, and you can check him out on Twitter at PosseCall. So, we are still talking about Kansas, we're talking about politics, we're talking about the abuses of capitalism. You don't want to scare any Republicans that listen to the show. You know, we're not against capitalism per se. Adam Smith was very clear. There's this hand, right? You talk about the invisible hand all the time in terms of prices going up and down. But he also talked about the vile maxim of mankind that most capitalists never mention, where he said, you know what, this system is good, but it can also be abused and it, you know, really take advantage of people. It can really take advantage, and actually, of entire countries, because greed is always there. And it's like, you know, that's never discussed. And you know, Mike told me something during the break that I found pretty interesting, especially in terms of, you know, the perceptions that we have about college campuses. If you're of a certain age group, that they're just, you know, this mass fields of left wing craziness. And it turns out that in Kansas, for damn sure, and I would say nationwide, but we're talking about Kansas right now. That may not necessarily be the case. We were talking about libertarianism and the campus, and Mike, you had something interesting to say.
Well, a lot of college-age youth, even Iraq war veterans, young returning Iraq war veterans I've visited with just, you know, recently, you know, now. And they fancy themselves libertarians. But once you begin to talk about the dynamic of Koch libertarianism, K-O-C-H, the billionaire down in Wichita, and how he is seated and fueled an extreme John Birch type of libertarianism, or you describe the libertarian roots of the Enlightenment in Scotland or in Europe with social democracies, where even the conservatives will not attack universal health care. There are actually conservatives in Europe who do not attack universal health care or the idea of it.
Yeah, we need to be very clear here for our stateside listeners that conservatism, republicanism in the United States is not the same thing in Canada. It is not the same thing in Mexico. It is not the same thing in the EU. It is a completely different mindset. It is a completely different tradition. There is no Tory tradition in the United States.
That's right. I heard that and that on a previous shows of yours, and they're outstanding shows. And you're at your best when you're improvisational. I really enjoy that. But you're right. There are no Tories in the United States. There's nothing like a Tory party. This is more, in my opinion, it's more of a Christian. It's a theocratic organization. The Republicans are more theocratic and dominionist. They're into running a government which is largely determined by a white Christian God. And as an old saying, there's a saying out here in Kansas, you can't be a Kansan unless you're Christian and white. Now that's just upside down from 1852, when the state of Kansas was literally killing people and we're being killed. Again, in order to make this a part of the union of the government against slavery. Kansas was founded against slavery and in blood.
Mr. Cadell, if you would you please go into the history of John Brown? Please.
Very controversial. John Brown, you know, just 20 miles from me. This is tough stuff in a way. I mean, you know, John Brown is labeled a terrorist by some and a freedom fighter by others. There's no doubt that he was religiously motivated. But what really is not known about John Brown is that he formed his own paramilitary group when the state was not a state. It was still a territory. And there was a lot of lawlessness anyhow. And there were successive waves of bounty hunters, slave bounty hunters, right up across the river here from me, less than 25 miles in Atchison, St. Joseph, Missouri, Weston, Missouri, right across the river from Atchison, Kansas. That's in the northeast corner where I'm near. And they would come in gangs, armed gangs, and come down through, literally through where my 10 acres are at. And they would, wave after wave, come down to Lawrence, Kansas. Lawrence, Kansas was founded in the early 1850s by a group of abolitionists called the New England Immigrant Aid Society. And what they were doing were bringing immigrants into Kansas to bring, you know, they were offering free land and they were offering free statehood. They were against slavery. There was no slavery allowed. So consequently, you had immigrants, indentured servants, slaves coming to Kansas, and it was a free man's land, a free people's land, and these armed bands of bounty hunters would cross the Missouri River on rampages, criminal rampages, come through your land, steal your firewood, kill your cattle, and on its way to Lawrence, Kansas, the citadel of free statehood in the state. Of abolition, And they would come down here, and they would, and they burned down Lawrence not just once, but twice, and they surrounded it many times, and hunting for free black people, and hunting for they horsewhipped the editor of the newspaper. The newspaper was an abolitionist press. Kansas has Emma Goldman called it, we should stop, Kansas should stop resting on your past glories, you know, and create new ones, because that was our past glory. We were very free people out here and in the 1850s, so sort of getting off the subject here. But, you know, that's sort of the segue into this. Dr. Tiller's father was doing abortions. Abortions were really, you know, women being free in Kansas was a big time-honored tradition when it came to the reproductive choices. That's why Dr. Tiller was one of only three physicians in the United States who performed so-called late-term abortions. And he was thoroughly, he's a Republican. He was part of the quote-unquote establishment here in the state. And he was part of, a movement for women to have free reproductive choices. And it's an amazing thing to see our state today. It's totally upside down. You would think we were part of the old South or something now.
All right, Mike, you know, let me ask you something. You know, not too many people know much about Dr. Tiller or what happened to him, which I find to be a bit disturbing, being that this was not in recent, this was not, this is fairly recent memory, and quite a number of people really don't understand what went down. So could you, give the listeners a quick rundown of what happened to that man?
Dr. Tiller was a Republican. He was part of the establishment in the state of Kansas. I mean, he was a lauded figure. His father performed abortions quietly for years at the present location where the current clinic is at in Wichita. And as once Roe v. Wade came in, Dr. Tiller, who was a former Marine, actually, he was a captain in the Marine Corps, I believe it was the Marines, and he came out of the military and he decided he was seeing the victimization of women in Kansas. He saw Roe v. Wade passed by the Supreme Court, and he took over his father's practice and openly started practicing abortions. Well, he became quite proficient at it. I mean, he was very conscientious of the women. Dr. Tiller's slogan was "Trust women," and I find that very useful when talking to almost anybody about the notion of trusting women, because Dr. George Tiller thought about that a long time, and that was sort of his one of his favorite mottos was, you got to trust women with their decisions. And I think that's one of the most challenging things many Kansans, especially white male Christian Kansans, have yet to understand, that you've got to trust women. Tiller was really in many ways walking a deadly, a barbed wire fence, really. And he was shot two times shot in both arms by Shelly Shannon, a woman from, I believe, up northwest Oregon or Washington. She traveled down here and stalked him and shot him as he came out of his clinic. And his clinic was bombed in 1985 with dynamite, blew the front porch off of it. And they stalked him literally day in and day out over the years. And what happened is the state government, these people ran for, these so-called right to life people, won positions in the state government after the 1991 Summer of Mercy, and won usually using religious demagoguery and mixed with politics from the pulpit. And they would win themselves into office, and then they started every year they would pass more and more restrictive laws against abortion or against the clinics or against the doctors. It would, there was always some new gamut of laws that the doctors would have to go through. And over the period of like 10 years, they really succeeded in basically outlawing Dr. Tiller's practice. Well, at one point, an attorney general named Phil Klein came in, and he really was sort of a gangster for life, pro-life, you know, his gangster for, against abortion. And he's the attorney general, had a great deal of power, and what he did is he filed criminal charges against Dr. Tiller, and Tiller stood trial in Wichita and was found not guilty by a jury of his peers. And less than 90 days later, he was shot in the face in the foyer of his church in Wichita and killed by a man who was attending that trial named Scott Roeder. Scott Roeder sat in the pews of the courtroom with many of the public organizers of the so-called pro-life movement in Kansas. Scott Roeder sat with them, knew them all, they knew him. Scott Roeder inflamed himself. They inflamed him. He was not a lone wolf. He was part and parcel from the Kansas City, Kansas area to Wichita, which is a good 120, 130 miles, of the pro-life community. It's a very interwoven community in Kansas. And Scott Roeder, after George Tiller was found not guilty, decided he was going to kill him. And he stayed, you know, he was put up, he was largely homeless. Somehow he got a gun and went down and shot, you know, the gun, he even practiced, told people he was going to shoot Tiller with the gun to his brother, David. You know, it wasn't like anyone was getting in his way to kill Dr. Tiller, you know, and the state government, I consider this the government of the state of Kansas largely part of an organized criminal syndicate of the so-called pro-life movement.
Well, that's a big statement. You know, in yeah. terms of the power of the Koch brothers, and that's something else I'd like you to get into. Not too many folks know about the connection between the Koch brothers, their father, and the John Birch Society. Which, depending on who you ask, some say is legal wing or the good face, perhaps, of the Ku Klux Klan. That's one way many Africans in this country look at it. That's the way I was raised to look at the John Birch Society and the Concerned Citizens Council and what have you. The Mississippi Sovereignty Commission, you know. You know, it's 2013 and we're still dealing with this. Could you give our listeners a rundown on the relationship between the Koch brothers, their father's support for the John Birch Society and these other nativist groups, and what is and how this affects a woman's right to choose in the state of Kansas?
Well, it's not just a support. Fred Koch, Charles and David Koch's father, made his fortune off of constructing fuel refineries in the Soviet Union during World War II.
Uh-huh.
Made a fortune off that.
Yeah, he got super
rich. And what happened?
No, he became a multimillionaire almost overnight behind that venture. He wasn't the only American to do that either. Armand Hammer was another one.
Right.
These were Americans that were making money, you know, supposedly anti-communist Americans now, who were making money, you know, off of the communist system. They were feeding off of the communist system.
That's right. And he came back to Wichita, and he comes back, and he's all—he gets all wackadoo because they nationalized the refineries and cut him out in what he thought was an unfair trade deal. A lot of people don't know that they actually offered him royalties. I mean, he's going to get a check every year; it just wasn't big enough for him. And he came back, and he didn't just support; he was a founding member of the John Birch Society. It was out of Appleton, Wisconsin. And just it is an extreme, virulent form of anti-communism, and it blossomed into the John Birch Society during the McCarthyist period, what many people call the 50s, the McCarthyism. The extreme Cold War was setting in, and these extremists really were nested and funded and by Fred Koch. Well, this is the household the Charles and David were raised in, today's billionaires, each of them worth $34 billion. That's the kind of household they were raised in, extreme anti-communism, extreme anti-collectivism, extreme anti-communalism, anything to do with people getting together, even trade unions. These people saw a communist in every bush. And, that kind of mentality went on and on. And the Koch brothers, Charles and David moved in New York because the gossip was that he wanted to bang ballerinas and be a playboy. And he is. He's married to a ballerina now. But and a big defender of PBS and nature and science on your PBS affiliates. But mm-hmm. Charles is the ideologue. Charles is the philosopher king. He's the Ayn Rand, the A-Y-N Rand. He's one that buried himself in the books and writes, makes pronouncements, and he's still in Wichita. And he cunningly, very cleverly, all the way back to Bob Dole, Senator Bob Dole, fueled and funded the pro-life movements, the more extreme paleo-conservative movements, and politicized them and gave large sums of money to campaign coffers for many, not just in Kansas, many in Kansas, majority of Kansas legislators who received money from the Koch family, but their cronies too. But now it's turned into like a national infestation where you see Koch money involved in the Cato Institute and stuff. When you approach these young college students down there at the University of Kansas and these university campuses, with this is the real roots of what you're talking, when you call yourself a libertarian, you know, this is what you're talking about. These young people get cross-eyed, confused, angry, usually extremely angry. And it's very difficult to visit with them because they actually interpret that as being anarchism, mm-hmm. which I find it. And I'd say, anarchism is nothing but capitalism. It's just only the strong survivor. You prepared to, these are Iraq war veterans and men and women. It's disconcerting. It's not, your campuses are not bastions of free thought. At least in Kansas, there's a lot of Koch influence, K-O-C-H influence, among even the inside the brains of these. I gotta say it, man. White skin privilege runs on these campuses anymore. You can't get it's hard to get a university education in Kansas anymore if you're just a working class stiff, no matter your skin color, and you want to work. You're willing to mop floors and sell bologna sandwiches. You could get to college. That's gone. Kansas. It's white skin privilege anymore. And it's really disconcerting anymore because I'm from the generation that, you know, people that are smart enough have a right, a fundamental right to education as long as if they're smart enough to need to go, you know, and there shouldn't be any money involved. But things have really turned upside down in Kansas. It's no longer the free state that it started out as.
Well let me ask you this. Let me ask you this. How many of you, if you and I went down to the campus this, you know, today, this afternoon, and we asked them, well, hey, you know, how many of you even know who John Birch was?
No, there wouldn't be anybody. Maybe one or two out of 100, I would say.
You know, I mean, he really was a piece of work. you know, because I think when I did mention him the last time, I was mentioning, when you look at China in terms of the Western attitude, you know, the Orientalism, you know, this colonialist look at what happens over in the East, in that strange East. You have Pearl S. Buck, and then you have John Birch. And you can you can decide which one you want to deal with, you know. One is respectful. The other one says, to hell with that. You will live and think the way we do, or you're a communist, right? You know?
Right. You're going to be, yeah. Well, you missed the part. You got to be a Christian.
Yeah. See, that's the thing. Well, see, with Pearl S. Buck, though, I mean, she was a missionary, but she wasn't an arrogant missionary, though.
No.
You know, she, I mean, look, I grew up Catholic worker, so you know, I believe that it's possible for someone to be of faith and to be a good person and be what is supposed to be, you know, the evil socialist thing. I believe that's totally possible. Matter of fact, for those of you who remember the band The House Martins from the UK, they were making the argument. They were making, Christian socialism. They were making that argument at one point in their albums. It's not impossible. So, you know, you would figure that with Kansas being in the Bible Belt, if there was any sort of radicalism, that it would be of a Christian worker, of a Christian socialist sort of radicalism. Why hasn't that developed in Kansas?
Well, it, in certain respects it has, but it's been suffocated. It's been killed in the cradle, literally, but through the use of Cold War anti-communism. I've met many good sisters and priests of the Catholic faith that are Catholic workers, as you call them, and I have a great respect. Matter of fact, many of them would come to the clinic. Some of the best days, the easiest days I had at watching the perimeter of abortion clinics in Kansas was when the priests and the nuns would show up, because they would at least keep a civil thing, civility going on. They would say the rosary, and that would be about the loudest you'd get. You didn't have these hillbilly Christians coming out screaming at trying to get the boyfriend to fight with them, screaming at women, "Mommy, mommy, mommy, don't kill me, mommy." I mean, that was just routine going on day in, day out. But when the brothers and sisters would show up out there, you know, they would at least hold them in check and keep their mouths shut, you know, I got to hand it to them, you know. But a lot of them, even if, you know, they were against war, I would challenge them. They said, "Well, I'm against war too." And, you know, you got to have respect for the brothers and sisters that would do that, that would come out. But they weren't there. They were far and few between those kind of days. Most of the days it was screaming and yelling and trying to block the driveway into the clinic and, you know, stalking the patients, the women, and the trying to engage in antagonistic behavior, verbally insulting people. That was what usually went on in the days. Plus, there was the usual bomb threats and things like that that went on too at the clinics in Kansas. I've dealt with that for years and years, and I'm going to give you a hat tip on that about the Dorothy, what's her name? Dorothy Day or Dorothy? Yeah, Dorothy Day, wasn't it? Catholic worker.
Yeah, Dorothy Day.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, you know, as a final question, man, you know, what do you see as the role of Radio Free Kansas in not just keeping progressivism going in Kansas, not just protecting women's right to choose in Kansas, but just in general, you know, where do we go from here? You know, how can Kansas not just get into the national struggle for, a better country, but how can the rest of us help Kansas as activists?
Well, first off, putting your show in rotation was a big deal here in Kansas. Kansas has no community radio stations, not even low-power FM radio stations. The nearest one is a 100,000-watt blowtorch, that's what I call it, KKFI, out of Kansas City, Missouri. There are no community radio stations in Kansas. None. Nothing like many of your listeners are familiar with. So I interpreted based on my newspaper days when I was running newspapers, I published stories about marijuana raids, the police being vicious, organic farming, communes that were still in existence here in Kansas, communes, and what I call the favorable phase of socialism in Kansas. There's actually, you know, the largest socialist weekly newspaper in the history of the United States was published out of Little Girard, Kansas, called The Appeal to Reason, by a guy named J.A. Wayland, who called himself the One Hoss Boss. And at one point, they reached 4.4 million copies of The Appeal to Reason sent out right before World War I to the rest of the nation. It was an inspiration for socialism in the world, if not just the United States. And many people have buried that. in this state. And I consider Radio Free Kansas in the vein of the old appeal reason. It's freely available. People can get it, and it's informative, and it offers a perspective on the world that you won't find anywhere else in Kansas. And that's what I look at Radio Free Kansas going to. It was named Radio Free Kansas by a professor of philosophy, Dr. Fred Whitehead. He named it Radio Free Kansas as a joke. We were both sort of laughing about it because he said, well, you know, what we need is what the CIA did in Europe with Radio Free Europe and Radio Free Africa or whatever. He said, we need sort of a left-wing version of what the CIA did to the starving natives in whatever country. Freely accessible radio that informs and educates people, but we need it from a left perspective. And he said, why don't we call it Radio Free Kansas? And since then, that's what it's been called. We've been operating since 2007. We've done over 1,500 shows and had all kinds of guests, everybody from Chalmers Johnson to Cindy Sheehan to Michael Parenti to all kinds. We've had a whole gallery of people on live on our show and recorded interviews. And we rotate with Free Speech Radio News proudly. We're the only outlet that broadcasts Free Speech Radio News on a daily basis in Kansas. And we're so happy to have Angry Indian, you, on our Friday lineup. This is one of the most important. I've actually got a lot of favorable comments from white Christians, male Christians, about your show. They're very happy to hear that. You're really helping people.
Well, that's interesting to hear. You know, we're not isolated. How I live my life and how I think about myself and how I look at the world affects the people around me. So, you know, I'm glad that they can, you know, can get something out of it. Say, hey, let's take a moment and think about what the hell is going on. Okay, you've been listening to Mike Cadell, executive producer of Radio Free Kansas. You can find his personal blog at fightingcockflyer.blogspot.com. You can find him on Twitter at Posse Call on Twitter. And you can go to Blog Talk Radio and look for Radio Free Kansas. Put it in the search bar. You'll find it. You know, I mean, it's worth listening to. And he has fresh content every day. You know, you never know what's going to pop up on the show. So, you know, you really need to check it out. And if you can, look, I don't have a credit card. I understand what's going on out here. We all know what's happening out here, but you just heard the man say he is the only resource. He's like my pal, Bob Kincaid, up in Appalachia. He is the only resource in his area. He's on the air. He takes calls. You know, I mean, this, you know, it costs money. I hate to say this, you know, because I don't like money. I don't like anything that has to do with money. But, you know, this does cost. And if you can, you know, if you have the means, you know, please help him out and, you know, keep Radio Free Kansas going, especially with Free Speech Radio, because there are too many outlets that are continuing to play Free Speech Radio. You know, it's Democracy Now! Like I said, head on radio.com with Bob Kincaid, Mike Malloy over at MikeMalloy.com. You know, we're all having a hard time staying on the air. So if you like what you heard today, because, you know, he's out of here doing what everybody talks about.
You know, if you have it, every one of our shows, there's always hyperlinks to Free Speech Radio News on the program summaries. On every, you click it, you go there. You know, here's how it works with some of my brothers and sisters. They get $100 extra. Micro-donate to 10, 5, 10, 15 of your favorite outlets for information. And those micro-donations mean a lot at Free Speech Radio News. They mean a lot at my side too, don't think, well, all I got is $10. That is a lot. We know how hard it is to donate in today's trying time.
Well, hey, Mike Malloy and his operation over in Georgia, and again, they are isolated in the state of Georgia, mm-hmm. right? You know, they were taking they're taking micro donations. They've been doing really well with 666, $6. 66 cents. So, you know, it's up to you, people. You know, it's up to you. I mean, you can ask yourself if it's worth it to take maybe, you know, that latte, you know, that one latte one day a week maybe that you could contribute to a show that you like. that you want to keep running. Because we all know that this next election cycle is going to be a mother.
Yeah.
So, you know, hey, there's Fox News and then there's the rest of us. Because the mainstream news isn't saying or doing anything. So, you know, Mike, thanks for being on, man. We're going to have you on again at some point, I'm sure.
Yeah, you know what, brother? Let's talk about the gun culture out here sometime. I'd be happy to talk with you about it. Because I had to carry a gun for 10 years guarding these abortion clinics, these women's healthcare clinics. And I hated that. I hated carrying a gun. I'll be happy to talk about the gun culture sometime.
Yeah, but you were working. Brother. You were a professional private investigator. That's different. You were licensed by the state of Kansas.
But I mean, I'm just letting you know, I've learned a lot about the gun culture in society. I'd be happy to talk with you sometime about that. And your listeners, I'll give you some stuff in there on that.
All right, we'll definitely mark that down on the calendar. You've been listening to Mike Cadell, executive producer of Roger Free Kansas. This is Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Stay cool, stay easy, and if you want the man to get up off your back, all you've got to do is stand up. Sig it.
You are listening to Aboriginal Press News Service Public Radio. Indigenous talk radio for Celtic Scotland and other people living in the Fourth World.